This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Good afternoon. That's right, Chris Plunkett. I am the host of Disaster Recovery Hour every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m. here at WVNJ, 1160 a.m., The Voice. I guess I got that cough again. I've got it going on for a couple of, about a solid 22 days to be exact, since Irene rolled into town. It's on an E4, was an I4. The update on Irene is that it's still here. There's plenty of people still displaced. The water's down, but today it's rainy again, but they don't expect too much accumulation of the rain. I was at the Passaic River 2 days ago, and it's receded some, but, you know, that's still lingering and leery about still entering some of these homes. I mean, you still go drive through Fairfield and Little Falls and other areas along the, you know, in Wayne, other areas along the Passaic. And they're still devastated. A lot of people aren't back. A lot of businesses aren't back. And that's one of the subjects today, later on in the show, with a guest that will be calling in today. One of my other guests is Bruce Wolf. He's from Garden State Environmental here out in Jersey in Bergen County at a Fairlawn. And Bruce is an industrial hygienist. And we're going to be talking about really mold growth and some of the things that you can do to help yourselves in your own homes, because now after this stage of the amount of water people have gotten, and also some of the people have been sitting on their homes not knowing what to do, not getting the right direction, whether it's from non-insurance or insurance people, there's cap numbers and so on and so forth. But in the last week, I've been doing more kind of demo, controlled demo, surgical demo, if you want, you know, in a controlled environment, so there's not cross-contamination and things like that, because people have mold. So, and if it's extensive, you know, I tell them, listen, you got to bring in a hygienist. You know, you want to set these things right, do it the right way. There's protocols, there's procedures, and there's clearance testing, which is very important. Bruce will get into that. You know, Bruce is going to be calling in about, I think about 10 minutes from now. I want to thank last week's guest, Jeremy Gruber Jeremy Gruber from Rescue One. He's down in D.C. He was a retired Montgomery County Fire Department fireman, and also a first responder when the Pentagon was attacked on 9/11. Last week was 9/11's 10-year anniversary, so we touched a little bit on that, and I brought in Jerry Giesinger, who is the director of the Disaster Restoration Academy down there in Tennessee, Memphis, Tennessee. He's a service master guy, and I am now a service master guy myself. Still maintaining the CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, but I am part of the service master. It's now service master by CPP. And things have been good, progressively well there. And Jerry and service master had a distinguished I don't know what it's kind of weird to say, but they were picked to handle the cleanup at the Pentagon. I mean, you want to do cleanup, you want to do the right thing, but you don't want to do it after a terrorist attack. But with that said, this is the world we live in, and it's not when things like these are going to happen. This is going to happen. I'm not predicting the future, but this is, you know, straight from our government also. So that's why the show is driven with preparedness, where we talk a lot about natural disasters, but we also talk about the human effect and the disasters that they wreak havoc on fellow humans, if you will, besides the war, which is a disaster in its own right. And we'll sign off at the end of the show with our usual. So where do we... Irene has done its damage. The numbers are astronomical. And insurable losses and non-insurable losses, and I got this Google information from somebody. I can't tell you who it was from. However, Washington is fighting over this bipartisan stuff. It's, you know, obviously it's not a terrorist attack. It's really somebody's ball and they want to go home and play with it. It's not a political show, but this is documented that there's funding that's kind of in limbo because these guys are fighting with each other because they want to give out X amount of dollars. The Democrats want to give out X amount of dollars, and the Republicans want to hold some of that money because they want to put it from spending from this. So it's, you know, who's caught in the middle is us. It's us citizens, and it's this, you know, natural disasters, you know, you have election years. These things should be brought up into the forefront. This should be part of these guys' platforms about, you know, being prepared. And I think it might equate to raising taxes. I don't know. I'm not an economist and a political guy. But the money's got to come from somewhere. And FEMA, I think they had to replenish FEMA. That was down to like $300 million as of last week. When you think about that, that's not a whole lot of money. Considering Irene has brought in over $1 billion worth of damage, so $300 million is a lot of money. I'd like to have it, but it's not going to for Bergen County, Passaic County, Long Island, Westchester, the southern part of this state. You know, I mean, all the way down to D.C. and further. You know, all the way up to Vermont. You know, I mean, that's another thing. With my second guest today, we're going to talk about the upper part of New York State. That listen, we had our own issues here, so we're not really concerned per se with people up in the Albany area or in Vermont, but we are, because they got crushed too. And you know what, the piggy bank is running dry. So that's why a lot of the guests that come on and myself advocating of the preparedness, and there's only so much you can do, but there is a fair amount of things that you can do. And especially, I'll give you the perfect example of my place. You know, when I got hit with Irene and my flooding, I know I have a cap. It's called the sump pump failure cap, sewage, so on and so forth. That's what the rider is in there. And I have X amount of dollars. And I wasn't about to try to save my carpet that has you know, well water. It could have sewage water. It could have anything. You know what? I don't need my kids playing with that kind of thing. So some of the people are out there are sitting on their carpets and the house is starting to smell. Or no, it's already is smelling. You got to get that out. You have to get it out just for safety purposes. And it's nickels and dimes. I mean, when I talked about it last week, it's just things. You know, September 11th taught us a very valuable lesson. You know, massive amounts of life was taken, and you know what? The other stuff is just things. You know, I know the buildings; those are big things, and that's part of our economy. We need that to move forward as a country. But you know, carpets and couches and things like that, it's they can be replaceable. People can't, and the health of people can't. And you know, that's, you know, after this whole Irene situation, and we're moving into this other stage of not mitigating all this damage. Hey, listen, there's a lot of good companies out there. We're all busy. I'm very busy, but there's some other great companies, some other great service master franchises, and some other great companies. I'm not knocking the guys. I don't need to blast other guys. It's not my MO. But you should have a professional come at least take a look, dry out your place of business and or your home, and at least get some guidance. And that's what the show is about. We're trying to put you guys in the right direction. I have plenty of things to learn, and it's a vast. The show has gone and its tentacles have now gone in very different directions. Not so much property, but the human aspect of disasters. So, Dave, I think we'll go to a break and pick up our first guest, and we'll rock and roll from there.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York metro and tri-state area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
In the early hours after the tsunami, it was ham radio that was on the air, saving lives. When Florida was ripped by hurricanes, the hams were there. In the critical moments after the attack of 9/11, it was the hams who coordinated emergency messages. When disasters strike, the hams are ready. Ham radio works when other communications don't. To learn how you can become a ham radio operator, call the ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, at 1-800-326-3942.
Disaster Recovery Hour. We're back here. I was checking out some paperwork here. Listen, any comments you want? You want to talk about today's program? Ask our guests any questions. Go to drhradio.net. That is drhradio.net. And like I said, ask a question. Type in a question. If you want to call, that number is 1-800. I always forget that number. I'm sorry, people. Yeah, we'll get it to you in a second. It's 1-800-962-1160. It's 1-800-962-1160. just to wrap up the thoughts I had before we went to the break. So you had made this disaster. There was 10 disasters this year in our country that were over $1 billion. So that says a lot. Now, how much money is insurable, and how much is FEMA going to be flipping? So in the article, it does go on and talk about Katrina and the four hurricanes that hit Florida. There's still money in limbo that our government is squabbling over and when to give it up. I mean, there's roadways and sewer systems that are still damaged from, that is in 04 and 05 hurricanes, and also with Katrina. And Katrina's a decade, if not more, issues that need to be resolved down there. So, I mean, when our president declared 48 states this year a state of emergency, and that's pretty wild. So that was part of my thoughts on this. And then also we were talking about, you know, the second stage of Irene is, are you properly drying and you're removing building components that are not salvageable? And if you don't, where does it go from there? And that leads us into my guest, Bruce Wolf. Bruce, you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you, Bruce?
I'm great, thank you. How are
Good.
You?
Bruce is an industrial hygienist. He is with Garden State Environmental out here in Bergen County in Jersey. Bruce's information is up on the website if you want to take a look at his bio and plus his contact information. Bruce, you know, the information coming out in the papers and the newscasts and say, okay, now that Irene has kind of left, more or less, physically has left. Now, what's the secondary damage that it's going to be causing if you're not addressing it and mitigating the wet issues? And it's antimicrobial. It's growth, and I'm running into a lot. And I know you're in the field right now, so I appreciate you taking, you know, 10 to 15 minutes with me to talk about this, because it's present. It's in the face of me every day now, because people want to have answers. You know, what can I do for them? What are you seeing out there?
Well, she may be gone, but she certainly left her mark. We've been getting, on average, about 4 to 5 calls a day from people who have had significant water intrusion from the storm. And what's interesting is many of these people have never had it before, even those that have lived through Floyd and some of the other storms.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty widespread damage. And so we're responding to homeowners, who are facing all kinds of issues. And I would say the first thing we're telling people is don't panic, because not everything that gets wet turns to mold.
Mm-hmm.
while you need to be aggressive and careful, and I'll explain some of the ways to do that, just because things got wet does not automatically mean that your house is fully contaminated and unsafe to live in.
Right.
So we try to put things in perspective for people.
And I spend time with that also. And, you know, I always clarify, listen, it's from my work experience, this is what I'm seeing, and this is what some of the things you do. But as a hygienist with the schooling and with biology and such like that, you're able to identify and test to put a definitive or answer definitively to their questions. You say, you know, half a dozen phone calls a day. It's probably from people who have never had water before, but the people who have had water have already gone through calling you or other companies because most of them have had the experience to say, you know what, I know what happens after this, I better rip this stuff out. However, that drying is also important. With the consultations and the walkthroughs that you're doing here, are you seeing buildings that have been, the components have been removed, but the proper drying hasn't been done yet, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, it's all over the place. I think most people have the right instincts that, you know, the potential for mold growth is all about moisture. So most people's instinct is, okay, let's get the water out, let's dry things up as quickly as possible. However, if you don't do it properly, you get hidden trapped moisture behind walls and behind baseboard and under carpets and in wall cavities that you really don't necessarily see. But the longer it stays there, the more microbial growth occurs. So, you know, the best process is to immediately remove those contents and materials that are most likely to hold water. Of course, carpet is one of those, carpet and padding. Mm-hmm. They're a wonderful sponge. They hold the moisture. They transmit that moisture to the walls, to the baseboard. So first step is getting that out. What a lot of people also do is they immediately start to run fans. And while I understand their basis for doing that, to try to move air to dry things out, if the water has been there for more than a couple of days and there's the potential for mold growth, we generally advise against fans because it will cause the spread of the mold spores, which are invisible and they're microscopic and very aerodynamic. Once you start blowing fans around, the mold spores that might have been limited to, say, a basement can be spread around to the rest of the house.
Right. So, I'm an advocate of, you know, having a fan. Some, you know, most of our houses around here that aren't dug deep and they have the, say, 7 foot high ceilings in the basements and finished basements, they have the small 12 inch high, you know, 2.5 feet wide windows that get some kind of air. I always advocate, this is pre-loss anything, just about having a fan just to push air around, because it's always good to circulate the air. But, you know, with drying and with using air, but dehumidification, and you will attest, is key to getting that, with the air movement, extracting that water, that moisture.
Absolutely. Dehumidification is key. And a lot of homeowners will go out and buy a home-style dehumidifier that requires them to go down there and empty the buckets. And what a lot of people don't realize is when the bucket fills up, the unit shuts off. So we advise people in this kind of scenario to try to get a drain kit installed so that it will run continuously.
A drain kit? You know what? After all these years, I do not know that.
Yeah, that's
where can you pick that up?
Most home stores will have it.
Okay.
You can run it into a sump pump. You can run it into a slop sink, into a basin. It doesn't have to be gravity feed. It'll be pumped, so it can go up and over into a basin. And that way it runs continuously. The other thing about moving air is what we also advise people is for the first day or so, it's fine to blow air.
Right.
What I'm talking about is after we think mold has grown,
mm-hmm.
and put it in the window facing out, and that will in effect create a little bit of negative air, and it'll suck the contaminated air out of the basement. So that's a very useful thing to do.
Okay. Just join us, Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 here at WVNJ 1160 AM. The voice, one of my guests today is, and also is a friend of mine, is Bruce Wolf from Garden State Environmental out here in Jersey from Bergen County. And Bruce and I, you know, we're coming off this the Irene, and she left town a little bit, but she left some presents for us, and one of those is the possibility, and a very, very high, which we've been seeing the last couple of days, last week or so, is the mold growth. Now, Bruce, now there's the homeowner, which is not as big as a commercial space. Are you approaching them both the same when you look at a commercial and a res?
The concepts are really the same. For some reason, there seems to be a rash of public libraries that have been hit by this storm. We've been out to many, many libraries with lots of concerns, especially when they have below-grade rooms. Mm. So the concepts are really the same. The scope is sometimes different, especially when you have large heating and ventilation systems and, you know, acres of carpeting and tens of thousands of books. But the concepts are really the same.
Yeah. Now, let's not even get into the cleaning methods of books, because we both know how to do that, and we want to get more. Is there things that people, before they're even to get a hold of me, and now the water's already kind of dry, and they've removed the carpet, and we talked about moving the air and creating a kind of a negative fan. Are there products out there that, you know, there's the bleach, are there things that they can mitigate themselves until a professional comes in like myself, or when you could come in and do some testing or something to just offset it a bit? What are some of those techniques?
Well, I think, you know, common sense has to rule the day.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, as I said before, you get out the materials that are going to hold the moisture and possibly transmit it to other items. So get out the wet carpet and get out all of that stuff. You have to be a little bit careful. If you respond quickly, whether it's a commercial, industrial, or residential space, if you respond quickly within 24 hours, and you suspect that the lower walls, if you have gypsum drywall, if that got wet, very proactively, if you can do it quickly enough, cut the bottom 2 feet out of that, and including the insulation, which can hold water. Put in as many dehumidifiers as you can. And if it's in a lower level separate that can be separated from the other parts of the house, a good common sense thing to do is to isolate that level of the house from the rest of the house.
Right.
With plastic, seal up any air conditioning ducts or heating ducts that might lead to other parts of the house, and sort of isolate it from the rest so that live in the rest while you're dealing with the basement.
Matt, you know, you talked about gypsum board, and if anybody doesn't know, that's basically sheetrock, but there's different types of sheetrock. And, you know, in our area, and, you know, and I'm talking about in 100-some-odd-mile radius here, you know, people have finished basements, you know, older homes, so they're maximizing their space, their living space. And people also have kitchens, and they have bathrooms in their basements. Now, people are saying, okay, well, I have the green board up. Now we have the regular drywall with paper encapsulant on that. How does that interact, and how do these so people can see is that mold, is that now mold? And also, let's talk about, you know, some people see mold on cement work. Let's talk about that.
Okay. Well, first of all, green board is mold resistant, not mold proof. So that if green board gets wet for an extended period of time, it will also support mold growth. It just takes a little longer, and it's a little less likely than regular wallboard. So we don't want people to get a false sense of security that just by putting in green board they can never get mold.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. Number two, what happens in many houses is they cut out the bottom few feet of sheetrock, and they look at the foundation, and the foundation has all kinds of funky things on it, whether it's white crystals or what they think is black mold, etc. It's possible that you can have mold growth on the foundation wall. The foundation wall itself is not a good food source for mold. It needs organic matter, cellulose, carbohydrates. But if it's a very dirty, if it's an older house where there's a layer of dirt, biological material mm-hmm. on the foundation, it can support mold growth. So the good news about that is it's fairly easy to take care of, and
right.
A professional company can come in with the right chemicals and the right protective equipment
mm-hmm.
And take care of that pretty easily.
Now, what about sealers on block work? You know, if you put bins up on block work, if you put some of those basement sealers on there, I mean, that's a cellulose. Could it grow on that?
Well, it's possible over time.
Right, that's what I saw.
If it gets dirty, it'll support mold growth.
Right.
But
yeah.
There's also a risk of a false sense of security with those water sealants as well.
Yeah.
Some people with leaky basements think, well, you know, I'll just paint the wall with dry seal
mm-hmm.
or one of those kind of products. And, you know, it's really not going to resolve a water issue.
Not a water issue, right.
Yeah, that just makes everybody feel good, and it might hold back a little bit of moisture for a period of time.
Hmm.
But ultimately, if you periodically get liquid water coming through the foundation, you need a more permanent solution.
And so, you know, there's some basic tips that Bruce has talked about. Bruce, one thing I want to talk about is, you know, we talked a little bit about that commercial part. Commercial spaces generally have drop-down ceilings. So now when you do have mold growth and you have the air conditioning system, the handlers sucking up air and so on and so forth because a lot of buildings, a lot of commercial spaces have laid dormant, but some of them now are built with, not some of them now, but the newer ones have metal framing behind them. So the component on that, if it sits down there, what's your advisement on that?
Well, there's a couple of ways that suspended ceiling tiles get moldy. One, of course, is roof leaks. And, you know, after a storm like this, that's pretty common. And the way for owners or tenants or whoever in the building is to look for water spots on ceiling tiles. And they're pretty commonly seen and often ignored. So our advice is when you see water spots on a ceiling tile, get up there and see what's going on quickly,
right,
sooner rather than later. So that's one way it happens. The other way is by condensation from HVAC lines that often run above those suspended ceilings. And that can cause water to drip down on the ceiling tiles as well.
I got a question from the web page, from the website, I should say. Bruce, just give me like two more minutes. We're going to go to a break. I just want you to answer that question and another couple minutes. I know you're busy, but if you could hang on for a few more minutes, that'd be great.
No problem.
Okay, we'll get a little commercial break. Be right back.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need answers. CPP is the answer. CPP is a full-service emergency services and restoration company. With 25 years of experience in emergency management and restoration, their seasoned team of skilled professionals is ready to assess damages and restore your property to its pre-loss condition.
Who do I call first? What about insurance? Is it safe to stay here? What do I do next?
Fire, smoke, water, or mold, CPP restores your property and your peace of mind. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, they've got answers. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area. Are we really out here all alone? Find out on the UFO Show with Kate Valentine, Friday afternoons at 1 on WVNJ.
I know it's tough to hear me with this firefighter's air pack on, but it's the only way I can be in this smoldering pile of ashes that was my office. And I could get in trouble, but I hope you won't make the same mistake I did, since at least 1 in 4 businesses that suffer this type of loss never reopen. So here goes. Just 3 days ago, we sat in this melted wreck of what used to be a conference room talking about how good things were. Over there was the tech room. The fire's bad enough, but the water damage really gets me. Look, here's an article describing us as visionaries. I should have done our disaster plan, but with everything else, I just didn't see this coming. Visionaries, huh? Well, the good news is, at least the ashes can't burn down.
There'll always be a few fires to put out around the office, unless it's not around anymore. But when you have a disaster plan, you can adapt, recover, and stay in control. Go to ready.gov and make your company's plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
We're back. Disaster Recovery Hour. Your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday on WVNJ. 1160 AM, The Voice, between 1 and 2 o'clock. Just to jump real quick back into Bruce, the question is from Dave. Says, what advice do you or Bruce have for someone who is thinking about purchasing a home in an area that may have been flooded in the past? What's your thought?
Well, I think there are disclosure laws in New Jersey. You want to look at the paperwork very carefully from the seller and ask a lot of pointed questions about the history of water intrusion. By law, they're supposed to disclose that.
Right, right.
Number two is to very carefully choose a home inspection company that has experience in water intrusion and mold. Not all of them do. And in some cases, home inspector companies call environmental consultants like us to back them up.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say have a professional if you suspect that it's a wet basement or a wet attic. Have a professional look at it before you sign any filing papers.
Bruce, I appreciate you taking time. Bruce's contact information is up on the website. Bruce is from Garden State Environmental out here, and they go in the whole. They go everywhere. You know, just like my company, CPP Emergency Services. Bruce, I appreciate you taking your time, and we'll talk soon. And good luck out there.
Thank you, my pleasure. And if anyone needs help for industrial hygiene, please feel free to give us a call.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Bye now.
Take care. Enjoy the rest of the day. My next guest on hold, I appreciate him holding there. Jeff Turner is a CBCP, and that is a Certified Business Continuity Professional, and everybody knows what that is because now I have Andy's been an instrumental part of the program, ACP International. He is the president for Long Island, and we've talked about businesses, business interruption, and business continuity planning, IT, but you know, so we just got talking with Bruce about primarily residential and some of the things they can keep their house habitable, if you will. Now we're, you know, here's a tax burden. We need to keep businesses up and running because I'm seeing lots of businesses out in the parts of Passaic County that are still not open. And per the commercial during the break, there's a very high percentage of people that or businesses that don't come back from disasters. Like I said, Jeff Turner is my guest. Jeff, you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I am fine. Thank you, sir.
Now, Jeff is the president for the ACP, let me see, I'm sorry about this, it's, because I always say Andy's in my head all the time, you know, I always say ACP of Long Island, but Jeff is the president of the ACP New York Capital Region, that's basically up in the Albany area. Jeff?
Yeah, that's correct.
That's correct. So Jeff and I chatted before the show and got Jeff's bio and history of being a continuity planner is well documented there. What we wanted to talk about today was now that Irene has hit, you know, it's still not too late to get, you know, because everybody thinks about continuity. They think about, you know, Fortune 500 companies, but that's not the driving force of our country with labor. It's the small, the mid-sized guy, right?
Yes, it is.
You know, so we wanted to talk about is how can we be of service to the small and mid-sized businesses? And so, Jeff, let's roll from there. What you're experiencing, you guys got crushed up there, just like we got crushed down here. And I've known you've worked for the New York State government agencies before. Jeff's also in the private sector primarily, and it's Tech Valley Continuity. It's a company up in the Albany area. Like I said, you can check out Jeff's bio. He's been doing this work. He's been a CBCP since 1997 and in the computer profession since 1980. Jeff, when you got into the continuity end of it, what was one of the driving forces for you to get into that field?
Well, I was working for a company. I was kind of the go-to guy. And we had a small company come up to our company and say, okay, if you want our multi-million-dollar contract, then you have to spend about $100,000 for DR Center. And so we looked at Microsoft and said they were going to give us a contract. We said, yeah, we can spend that money. We'll get into the business.
Right.
So we set up. That's what got me into it. And that's still happening today, in fact, even more and more. Companies are getting themselves locked out of bidding opportunities because they don't have a plan.
And Andy, enlighten me about that. It's, you know, people are it does cost money, but you are losing. You're stepping over dollars to save dimes here, correct?
And it doesn't have to cost that much money. That's
right.
The whole thing. People, I hear this all the time. Oh, I can't afford it. I'm too small. I don't have the time. I can't afford it. But the fact of the matter is, and you said in your commercial, 25% of the companies never reopen after disaster, and it doesn't have to be an Irene. It doesn't have to be a Lee. It could be something as relatively minor as a water pipe burst in the ceiling that lands on your computer system and floods out your offices. 3 weeks. And you're more likely to have that happen than the Irenes and the Lee.
Right. I mean, there's more. I have more common, you know, water heaters and pipe bursts. In New York City, which affects multiple floors, but single family dwelling fires and things like that. So again, you're trying to hit home as the small guy to keep. And you know, most towns are built up of the little pizza and the bagel store and the quick checks and all the rest of that stuff. And do they have DR plants?
Yeah, retail outlets are. Probably one of the more difficult to set up a plan for, because that, if they have a fire in their store, they have lost their place of business. And so they have to have a way to have more than just a fire sale. They need a way to keep in business while their business is up and running. And companies do that by doing cooperative type things with other stores.
Mm-hmm.
They could bring in a trailer and put it on their parking lot. You know, there's a number of ways they can get around it that doesn't cost them any money until they need it. And so that's the kind of stuff that people do. One of the things that cracks me up is when I'll go into a place and I'll say, do you back up your computers? And they'll say, sure, we back them up. And I'll say, and where do you put your backup tape? Oh, it's on top of the computer, and I'd leave it there and, you know, put it in when I need it.
That's not funny, but it's funny.
It is funny because they think you're safe. And that's the problem is, and there's a lot of these popping out on the web. The do-it-yourself kits, and it says you have to back up your computers.
Mm-hmm.
And they do, and then they put the tapes right on the computers. Well, if you have that water pipe, or if you have the fire that takes out the data center, you've lost everything regardless. So.
Now, I was down in Trenton last week on a meeting, and I don't know if you know the makeup of the landscape of Trenton, but it's right by a significant body of water, and. The person I had the meeting with, he works for the state, and he was talking about how half downtown was flooded out, and those are government buildings. People couldn't go to work. Fortunately, they have, between New York and, not between, but the two states are pretty much the leaders, and California's also the one actually who came up with this whole contingency, emergency planning, and so on and so forth, as well as the World Police and Fire Games that just ended for 9/11's 10-year anniversary. But, you know, you're up in Albany area. That's the state capital. Places shut down. I want to talk about the damage up there and your government assistance. I know you worked for government agencies up there. What is some of that intel?
Well, the agency I'm working at right now is the Department of Labor. And when FEMA came through and we had the disaster, and we got very hard hit. We had literally towns were just washed away. People saw their entire lives just go down the river, watching cars and houses and everything else. What FEMA has done is they set up these disaster recovery centers, and the agency I'm with now, or working with now, they have tables in those disaster recovery centers. So people who are displaced from work can go in and apply for unemployment benefits right there and take care of that. But I've noticed that there's a lot of other tables in there. You have SBA, the Small Business Administration, is in there. You have the Department of Health. You have the Department of Labor, DMV. There's all kinds of departments for the aging. Many state agencies for the individual are represented in these disaster recovery centers. For a business, you can sit down at the Small Business Administration table, and they will walk you through the low-interest loan process.
Mm-hmm.
There's no granting there, but at least they will give you, an opportunity to take a small business loan.
Right, the process it through, right. Just join us. It's Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Tuesday between 1 and 2 p.m. WVNJ, 1160 a.m., The Voice. Common page is drhradio.net. That is drhradio.net. Just to diverse, just for a second, I do have a question that was for Daniel. It's from Daniel and was for my previous guest. With dampness and flooding, when it is time to call a professional, when you should just at least call somebody, Daniel, and get some intel, get some consultation over the phone. And if there's some red flags that professional would come out there, whether it's me or some other person in my field. But let's back up. Let's go back to right now with Jeff. Jeff, so you have government people up there at tables, I guess like a job fair, if you will. Let's break it down simpler for the listeners to grasp that. SBA loans, and there's grants. Now, so there was no grants being offered up there? It's just the small business loans?
There's no grants for businesses.
No grants?
there are no grants for businesses. You have to go through the normal application process. Certainly, there may be some waivers and streamlining of the approval process.
Uh-huh.
But you're essentially taking out a low-interest loan, and if you cannot make those payments, if you qualify and get that loan, mm-hmm. if you can't make those payments, you're in default.
Right. Okay. Now, you know, one of the things that's come to the forefront in the papers in my area and probably up there because they're all pretty much syndicated. But I've known for years is I've asked business owners, listen, well, you know, I'm sure you get business interruption clause. You know, there's some form of rider with that, and some guys are just, or I shouldn't say guys, some people are just blind to that. They have, what are you talking about? I said, well, look, you just had a fire, you just had a flood. You're not going to be generating money. And you're not going to be able to pay your bills for X amount of weeks or however long it's going to take. Have you seen a lot of that when you go out and you're consulting these smaller businesses? Do you inquire about their insurance policies and what kind of coverage they have?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I like insurance. I think it's very good. But I'll throw my business continuity and insurance according to Jeff Turner. Insurance is great. It's very important, and it will definitely help pay for the funeral. Unfortunately, if you don't have a business continuity plan, that's all it will pay for. If you have a plan, especially business interruption insurance, combined with your disaster recovery plan, that'll pay for the resurrection of your company.
Let's go to a break. Be back in a couple minutes and pick up with Jeff. Got a couple more bullet points we want to discuss, and we'll rock and roll. Be right back.
If you missed part of today's program or you want to hear the show again, you can do so with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast. Just go to www.drhradio.net, enter your email address, and the show will be delivered to your inbox. Keep you and your family safe by getting information on being prepared with the Disaster Recovery Hour podcast, available at drhradio.net. When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick, focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. To reach CPP Emergency Services and Restoration anytime, visit them on the web at www.cppems.com. That's www.cppems.com, cppems.com. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration, servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area.
Do you know that there are some emergency shelters that have no emergency backup generators? You can be prepared and have your own emergency generator for your home and business. Hi, I'm Dan O'Brien from Academy Electrical Contractors Incorporated, a full-service electrical contractor servicing the tri-state area since 1981. Our specialty is generators. We give you a complete turnkey installation, service your existing generator, rent you the temporary machine for that planned shutdown or that unexpected power failure. Academy Electrical Contractors can install a generator to protect your family and business from a power grid failure. Power your heating and air conditioning system, keep your refrigerator and freezer running, power your well pump, or power your sump pump. Visit us on the web at academyelectrical.com. That's academyelectrical.com. Or give me a call at 877-SPARKIES. That's 877-772-7597. Academy Electrical Contractors, generating satisfaction 24/7 since 1981.
At least one in four businesses affected by a disaster never reopen. Let me repeat, at least one in four businesses affected by a disaster, whether it's man-made or natural, never reopen. Yet far too many business owners put off their company's disaster.
You have 5 new messages.
Can you sign it for me, please?
Don't forget those copies for the presentation.
Disaster plan because they let too many day-to-day things get in the way.
Is that 3 p.m. going to be all right with your schedule?
Hey, don't forget that Stan proposes due.
Be in the conference room in 5 minutes, please.
To save your messages, press 1.
Was
received, dispatch. Truck 47 en route to 614 North Front Street.
Received. Be advised, truck 47. Heavy fire showing from the ninth floor. Second alarm being dispatched at this time.
Disasters are unpredictable, but when you have a plan in place, you can better adapt, recover, and stay in control. So don't wait. Visit ready.gov to make your company's disaster plan. Ready.gov. It's never too late to protect your business until it is. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We're in the fourth quarter. It's winding down. The Giants won last night. That's a good thing for me. That was helpful for my wife. And I'm sure you're a Bills fan. Are you a Bills fan, Jeff?
Oh, no, I'm Giants all the way.
Ah, all right. I knew I had you on the show for a reason. But more on the serious side, if we can be serious. Contingency of your planners, ACP, New York City, New York Capital Region. I see, you know, we have your information up on the website. Now, a lot of people podcast the show, so they listen to it later on down the week. And if there's anything that, you know, just peruse that in the next couple of days. And starting from tonight, people put out the information or the questions out there. You can freely, you know, just hit reply and answer those questions for you. But also, you guys are going to be having a webinar in a couple of weeks, October 5th, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. What is the website? Because, and this is, I'm saying this because this could be, you know, anybody can log in from across the country, because I got guys in California. I say guys in a generic term. People from the service master industry, the people in California listen to me. Some people in Texas and down south. I had a great class of 26 some odd people that tap into the podcast and so on and so forth. But small businesses, even in Florida, could latch on to this, and because I got people in Florida too that could latch on to your webinar and try to get the basis of, okay, where can they move forward, and you guys could, I guess, solidify that plan or their needs, because it's just like insurance, right? Basically, what are your needs, and you're going to try to prod and grab out of that information, correct?
Correct. Basically, what this webinar is really designed to do is it's an open discussion so that people can share what they experience before the event occurred. I mean, we had weeks notice that this was going to come knocking on our door.
Right.
What did people do? What did they do right? What did they wish that they could have done right? And then, you know, did they start a backup plan? Did they, you know, set up their phone list? Did they make sure everybody knew what was going on? Did they say, okay, if we lose the offices, we're going to work out of my home for the next couple of days, or we're going to find the first hotel that has power and internet connectivity? Did they have plans that they activated? Did they call their disaster recovery third-party provider and say, okay, we're on alert. Did we get ready? So that was the before. And then when the event occurs, did they actually send people to their recovery sites? I know that a lot of people did that in Katrina when it went through New Orleans, and those people survived. If they waited till afterwards, then it was more of a challenge just getting to the site. But did they have people sitting there? Were the systems up and running when it hit so that the remote offices around the country had a place to work? And then afterwards, what did they find when they went back to the office? Had the building moved 3 feet off of the foundation?
Right.
Did they find out that they had asbestos in the house or in the facility because it was so old? You know, all these different things that they might have uncovered. What did they do? Did they set up a trailer and do a an Irene sale?
Mm-hmm. All right. It's the rest of the country really reacted quite well, and we got a lot of help from outside the states to come up here. I mean, the northern seaboard got crushed, you know. And so you had people from Florida, from Texas, and from the Midwest, and even as far as California coming in to assist, because it is, you know, it's a unified country when we all get crushed like this. And crushed is affected in a disaster. And but one of the things that a collateral damage, if you will, is it's like the over inundation of volunteers. And okay, what do you do with those volunteers? So, and that's also part of a disaster. And you know, this business continuity is like, we don't need 55 guys to handle this one little discipline. You need one guy and a backup to that one guy. And that's, you know, and I think, like, let's take a pizzeria, nice and simple. Take a pizzeria who gets their cheese from somebody down here in Bergen County or out in the island, the warehouse areas that got flooded out. What happens then? You know, he's not direct. His business, he's got power. He's got employees. He's got everybody. Everybody can make it work, except he doesn't have actually a product to make to sell. You know, there goes part of his business continuity plan, right?
Correct. Yeah, supply chain and distribution is critical, and people don't plan for that. When I did the H1, an interesting story. I did H1N1 lecturing around the country, or at least around New York State, when it was in the pandemic stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing a lecture to a residential care facility that took care of people who were physically and mentally challenged. And I had a room full of nurses. And I said, okay, you have to worry about supply chain, because if you have diminished people, you're not going to have everybody driving the trucks. They're not going to be wanting to go out and stuff like that. I said, so if there was one thing that you wanted to stock up on before the pandemic hits hard and you start to run out, I said, what was the one thing that you would want to have on hand? And I had three nurses at the same time stand up and say, we want Depends. We want adult diapers to be there when the pandemic hits, because that's the one thing they didn't want to be without. And if you're in a manufacturer, if you're in a business office, whatever you use that you rely on the most, if you see something like this coming, get some stuff ahead of time.
Yeah. again, you know what, the website is up on our website, if you want to check out the webinar, but also the website is techvalleycontinuity.com. That is techvalleycontinuity.com. Jeff is the founder and president of techvalleycontinuity.com, and also is the president of the ACP New York Greater Capital Region up there in the Albany area. And what area of Albany does that, you know, how far north and south and west and north and so and east goes with that?
Well, we've probably got an actual membership range of close to 100 miles. We've got people that have come as far away as Syracuse. They've come in.
Okay.
We've got some people that are in upstate New York, which is about 45 miles north of Glen Falls area, and then pretty much the capital region. We have our chapters, I think we're 32 strong now, which is not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad.
Mm-hmm.
We're basically holding our own.
Well, you know, it's I know it's been around for a long time, but it's more since it's like a post 9/11 thing about, you know, DR, disaster recovery plans, you know, so it's getting more headway. And I don't know if you worked with the government, the New York State government, and Andy has talked about it, and I've had some other continuity plan guys along with FEMA guys and OEM guys about not the old guard. It's, you know, we have the public and private needs to work together, and it's still got things to grow. There's still, you know, what I've seen, and I'm a novice to it now, but I'm getting a lot of information, and I skim over them like, well, you know, it seems like common sense. Why wouldn't we, if we're electing our officials, why wouldn't they reciprocate and say, listen, you guys are the experts in making widgets, so we need you guys at part of this board or something like that. Jeff, I'm glad I met you via the radio, and I'm also a member of the ACP, so I get all the updates, and I'll check out the webinar also on October 5th, and hopefully we can have you on again, because you're up in the state capital of New York, and people like to get intel about what's happening up there. Jeff, again, the website is techvalleycontinuity.com. That is techvalleycontinuity.com. It's on the webpage right now, the DRH Radio, drhradio.net webpage. And you can reach out and look at any questions, Jeff. Just take a look at the website in a couple of days if you get too busy, and reply to any of those questions. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Jeff. I didn't think about, some of the things that Jeff was talking about. I didn't think of, I haven't discussed that with some of the other ACP guys. So it's always, there's always, if you're a president of something, we're going to go with the assumption that you know what you're talking about. And then Jeff hit home on some points there. Listen to sign up for the podcast. There's, in this day and age, you got, it used to be 5 pounds in a 3 pound bag. It's 10 pounds in a 3 pound bag in our region. And, even for, all the way down to Virginia, all the way up into, the northern, North England, the New England states, you know, we are jamming so much into our, into 24 hours, it's ridiculous. So if you get a little leisure time, which is very rare, but you can kind of, you can go through the, you can go through the podcast, sign up for the podcast, go to drhradio.net, that is drhradio.net, and sign up. And, you know, every week when it gets uploaded after the show, a couple hours afterwards, you'll get an email notification, and boom, you can listen to it, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning in the dark. I don't know, you know, it's, but if you can get, if you can draw something from the show, and that's the primary reason we're doing the show, and we're going to keep on plugging away here, because our country, it's the world we live in. It's no longer, it happens somewhere else. It happens here. And it's my opinion, but you know, you're talking about, you know, we have bigger natural disasters now. And obviously we have a very large man-made disaster that is always under threat. And in the following weeks, we'll be talking to some people about those threats. Nothing scary or anything, but, you know, again, it's on the preparedness side. So you know, again, a couple minutes ago in the show, we do have a disaster. We have the war that we really should be ending. And, on you know, the human casualties is just, it's unacceptable at this point. I see a car in my neck of the woods, a girl who lost a very good friend from out here in Westwood, and I see the you know, rest in peace sign. It's just constantly hits home about you know, these young guys, you know, 21, 22, 23 years old, getting killed, IEDs. It's insane, but they're protecting us. So when you see a vet, thank a vet. And there's a lot to go with, you know, these guys, they need, you know, I know the country's a little lacking in jobs and so on and so forth, but you might want to give a vet a second look if you know, you serve the country and, you know, for employment purposes. I guess we're going to wrap it up. Just wanted to, you know, and I also have an interesting article about doomsday coming for catastrophic risk insurers. You know what? It's good headlines. It's not doomsday, but it's going to be the guy who's prepared, the family who's prepared, is going to be better off. And I think about, you know, our counties, you know, break it down to real small. If you can handle, if your municipality is well prepared, and ask questions too, you know, some towns could, you know, they don't mind you coming down to the police department and the fire department to say, I was thinking about this. Is there something that we could do to help you guys do your job better, or not better, but assist you? Remember, citizens, you know, Times Square bomber, you know, the shoe bomber, these guys, the underwear bomber, all these bombers, you know what? It was citizens and law enforcement and first responders want us to have the heads up and keep our eyes open and ears open, all right? So God bless our country, and we'll rock and roll, and we'll see you next week. Take care.